Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to Eye on the Community. I'm Vicki Pepper. News-breaking uncertainty triggered by the pandemic, the election, and the job market's shaky footing are just some examples that have led to astonishing levels of anxiety, which has tripled, and depression, which has increased by 2.5 times since the COVID-19 outbreak. What if people knew there was an easy way to experience some relief? It's possible, and cognitive therapy pioneer Dr. David Burns tells us how in Feeling Great, the revolutionary new treatment for depression and anxiety. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show. I'm really excited and honored to have the chance to chat with you.
How is your latest book, Feeling Great, different from your previous book, Feeling Good, The New Mood Therapy?
Feeling Good is a book I released in 1980, and it described what was at that time a radical new development in psychotherapy based on the idea that thoughts, not events, cause your feelings. And when you're upset, your mind will be flooded with negative thoughts that are actually distorted and contain thinking errors, like you're telling yourself, I'm no good, I'm a loser, I'll be depressed forever when I give my talk at my church group or at work, my mind's going to go blank, I'm going to make a fool of myself. And that when you change the way you think, you can change the way you feel. And that was huge at the time because up until then, it was thought if you're depressed, you've got to take pills and antidepressants. And research indicates that 2/3 of the people who are severely depressed, if you just give them a copy of my first book, Feeling Good, they'll recover in 4 weeks with no other treatment. And that was really exciting. That's research that's been replicated many times in professional journals. But I was curious, how about the third who didn't respond quickly? And so in the last 40 years, I've been doing research on why some people recover from depression and others get stuck in it. And based on that, I've developed powerful new techniques that I did not have at the time when I wrote Feeling Good. And that's why I wrote Feeling Great, because of new techniques that can make it even easier and faster to recover from depression and anxiety. That's kind of it in a nutshell.
As you state in Feeling Great, our feelings are rooted in our thoughts and not what's happening in our life or the world around us. So what would you say to people who trace their feelings of hopelessness, despair, and anger to the pandemic and its toll on their family, career, or income?
Well, I've treated many, many people who have pandemic-related depression and anxiety, and I've actually published those sessions, live therapy sessions, on my website, feelinggood.com. I call them Corona Casts, and they're on the tab for the Feeling Good podcast. And it's the same with people who are depressed and anxious because of the pandemic. It's still distorted thoughts that cause you to feel the way you do. For example, I treated a woman whose husband is an emergency room doctor in New York City. And he treats, and intensive care also, and he treats constantly COVID patients. And she was terrified because he had to intubate two of his close colleagues. Mm-hmm. And intubation means the prognosis for recovery is pretty guarded. And so he freaked and she freaked, and they were panicked that he would get COVID and then their three children would get infected. And so he moved about a mile from their apartment. And she asked for help because she cried herself to sleep every night thinking my husband's going to die, this is unfair. and having a lot of negative thoughts flooding through her mind. But the one that was really bothering her the most was the thought, and this will be unique for each person, and what I want to say, that events will never upset you. The COVID is not the cause of your feelings. It's natural to be concerned and upset, but if you're depressed and anxious, you're giving yourself a distorted thought, something that's not true. And what she was telling herself was, I have to be strong. I can't share my feelings with my husband. You know, it would be too disturbing to him to know how upset I'm feeling. And then when we took a look at those, she saw that they contained a lot of common thinking errors, like should statements, like the idea, I should be strong. And then she was able to reflect on that and say, well, wait a minute. Why do I have to be strong all the time? Maybe I'm allowed to be upset. Maybe some sadness and anxiety is indicated and is a reflection of my love for my husband and my love for my children. And then she questioned the thought, I can't share my feelings with him. And she thought, gosh, that's kind of all or nothing thinking, black and white thinking. And it's also discounting the positive, because in the past, when I've shared my feelings with him, it's made us closer. That's the source of our real love. And this is ridiculous to think I have to hide my feelings. And so that's kind of how it works. She was able to crush these thoughts, and it took about an hour and a half session. When I work with people, I work in a two-hour session, but I try to complete treatment in one session, which I usually can do. And by the end of the session, she was feeling terrific. And then the next day, her worst fear came true. She learned that her husband called that he had a fever and had a positive test for COVID. Now, ordinarily, you'd think, oh, gosh, that's a bad event. Events cause us to be upset. But events never can cause the way you feel. It's your thoughts that cause the way you feel. And paradoxically, the moment she discovered that he had COVID, she went into a state of euphoria, because it was a mild case, and she saw he's not going to die. But anyway, that's how the therapy works, and it's been known since the time of Epictetus 2,000 years ago that thoughts and not events create our feelings. And certainly healthy negative feelings exist. You don't have to be happy all the time. I'm 78 years old, and I'm concerned, and I'm careful when I'm jogging or when I'm out to wear a mask and keep social distance. But if you're feeling depressed and anxious, that's not caused by the events of your life, but the thoughts you have about it. And that's really good news, because we can't change what's happening to us, but you can change the way you think and feel. And that's why I wrote Feeling Great, because there are so many new techniques available now to help people who are struggling, who are listening to the show right now, who are feeling depressed or anxious or thinking I'm not good enough, or my case is hopeless, I'll never be happy. And those thoughts are among the most painful a human being can have. But recovery from depression and anxiety is one of the greatest experiences a human being can have.
And why do so many people get stuck in depression and anxiety?
That's the real discovery that I've made in the last 15 years in my weekly psychotherapy training group at Stanford Department of Psychiatry near Palo Alto. And it used to be thought that people get stuck in depression for negative reasons, like you want to feel sorry for yourself, or people like secondary gain, so they cling to their depression. And the problem with those theories is that they're really insulting. They're put-downs to people. They make it seem like people with depression are spoiled children who are trying to get attention. And while there's sometimes a grain of truth in those theories, they're usually not true. And what we've discovered is that depression and anxiety actually come from what's most beautiful and awesome about you and your core values. Take, for example, the woman whose husband was an emergency room doctor. Her tears, her depression, her anxiety were reflections of her love for her husband and her love for her children. They weren't because she has a chemical imbalance in her brain. It's because she's a tremendous person, a loving, giving person. People who are depressed are almost always self-critical. A lot of users will identify with telling yourself, I'm not good enough. I shouldn't be so screwed up. I'm inferior because there's nothing really special about me. I'm just average. And other thoughts like that, you beat up on yourself when you're depressed. You tell yourself, I'll never recover. I'm going to be depressed forever. And those kinds of thoughts also result from what's beautiful about you, like your self-critical thoughts show that you have high standards, and they show that you're humble, not arrogant or narcissistic. And they also show that you're honest and realistic, because you do have a lot of flaws. We all have a lot of flaws. And they also show that you're accountable, looking within yourself rather than blaming other people or blaming the world. And in the new book, Feeling Great, I show people how to discover that your depression, your anger, your hopelessness, your guilt, your shame, your frustration, your loneliness, reveal as many as 10 or 20 or even 30 beautiful and awesome things about you, and that those negative feelings often have tremendous benefits for you, like your anxiety keeps you vigilant, keeps you safe, keeps your children safe. And the odd thing is, the moment you discover that your negative feelings don't result from what's wrong with you, like a diagnosis from the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, the idea that you have a mental disorder or personality defect, that you're broken in some way, but your negative feelings result rather from what's right with you, what's the most positive and beautiful parts about you. And the odd thing is, the moment you discover that, you won't need your negative feelings anymore, and discovery will be just a stone's throw away. And that's the new discovery in Feeling Great. That's why I wrote the new book, because I wanted to share this with the world, with therapists as well as individuals who are suffering, because it's the exact opposite of what society is telling us and what our culture is telling us. And it's incredibly liberating, because it reduces the shame and defectiveness that people always feel when they're depressed and anxious. And the moment you realize that it's something beautiful about you that causes negative feelings, suddenly all the resistance disappears, and it makes it really easy. And when I wrote To Treat People or To Recover, when I wrote Feeling Good, it was at that time a revolution in 1980, because instead of people going psychoanalysis for years on the couch, free associating, or taking antidepressant pills for months or years, they could recover in as little as 6, 8, 10, 12 sessions, and that was considered spectacular in the 1980 era. Now, with the new techniques that I've developed and described in Feeling Great, when I work with people, 90% of the time I can cause complete recovery in 1 2-hour therapy session, or even an hour and a half sometimes. Now, I'm not promising that for people who read the book Feeling Great. You have to read the book. It's a pretty good-sized book, and do the written exercises in it. And that may take a little time and certainly some commitment and effort, but I'm convinced that people who read Feeling Great and do the written exercises can have a profound effect on you. The book was just released, and I'm starting to get a lot of fantastic reviews on Amazon and emails. One fellow wrote to me, and he said, "I've been depressed for 42 years. I haven't had one happy moment, and I've had therapy, I've had every known antidepressant, and nothing has helped even a little bit. And I skimmed through your new book, and it did do a bit of good, Feeling Great. But then I thought, well, the doctor kept saying I've got to do the written exercises, so I decided to do one of the written exercises. And Dr. Burns, I suddenly said something kind and loving to myself for the first time in 42 years, and my depression and anxiety instantly vanished. And I'm feeling joy and happiness for the first time in my life. God bless you, Dr. Burns." And so I'm hopeful that, you know, I know that many people listening to this show have struggled with depression and anxiety. As you said in the data, my own research has confirmed that depression and anxiety have increased tremendously. And a lot of the people listening are struggling, and they don't know that it's possible to change the way you think and feel, often without lengthy therapy, and often without any therapy at all, and often without having to take antidepressant medications. And I think that's really great news.
Is resisting positive change in recovery a form of self-sabotage or something more complicated?
Well, it's not complicated. It's super simple, but it's not self-sabotage. That's that idea that's been around for decades. Why do people resist change? A lot of people get sucked into negative moods. We all get upset. But most people can pop out of a bad feeling in an hour or a few minutes or a day or a couple of days, but other people tend to get sucked into depression and anxiety. And I've had people who have said, "I haven't had one happy minute my entire life." But it's not because people want to self-sabotage for the most part. It's because the negative thoughts and feelings that cause depression and anxiety result from your core values, from what's most beautiful about you. The idea that we self-sabotage, it's very complicated and very fancy and very intimidating, and it sounds like people are fools, like we want to shoot ourselves in the foot. But when you realize the real reason that you're depressed and why you get sucked into depression and why it's hard to escape from it, when you see the real reasons, it's incredibly liberating.
In Feeling Great, you focus on the destructive impact of cognitive distortions. Can you share a few common everyday examples?
Yes, very, very much. And people will identify with this. There's 10 thinking errors. And I wrote about this in my first book, Feeling Great. And I brought it to life again in the new book, Feeling Great. Feeling Good was the first book. Feeling Great is the new one. But I talk about this a lot. And there's a lot of thinking errors, like all or nothing thinking, looking at things in black and white. If I'm not a complete success, I'm a total failure, or overgeneralization, generalizing from a negative event to all the future and to yourself. Like a young woman recently told me that her boyfriend of 2 years had broken up with her, and her thought was, I'm unlovable. I'll be alone forever. That's a classic overgeneralization. And then another one is should statements. I shouldn't feel the way I do. What's wrong with me? I shouldn't be so screwed up. I shouldn't be so shy and anxious. Or, you know, emotional reasoning. I feel like a loser, so I must be one. In the first chapter, I think, in Feeling Great, I talk about a woman with postpartum depression. And we're wrongly told that that's a biological, hormonal thing that requires biological treatment. But again, it's caused by negative thought and thinking errors. And what she was telling herself, this woman, was she was a failure as a mother. That's a typical all-or-nothing thinking and overgeneralization. And why did she think she's a failure as a mother? Well, for 2 reasons. Number one, her baby was having trouble with breastfeeding, so she thought somehow she was failing there. And in addition, because she was a high-powered researcher who wasn't ever entirely sure she wanted children, now that she had her child, she was missing her work. And she was thinking, well, gosh, I'm not always as excited about my baby as I should be, so I'm a failure as a mother. A good mother shouldn't have mixed feelings about her baby. And so you can see all of this all-or-nothing thinking, that perfectionism. You see, I've got to be like the perfect mother. And the thing about that is that came from her core values. You see, her all-or-nothing thinking, her perfectionism, has propelled her to the tremendous success that she's had in life. And the moment she saw this, that it wasn't some chemical imbalance in her brain, it was her core values led to her beating up on herself. And then it was simple to get her to recover. And really, it was about 20 minutes. And I used just one of 100 techniques that I've developed that I've written about in Feeling Great. But I said to her, would you say this to another mother who's having trouble with breastfeeding and has a negative feeling sometimes about being a mother? It isn't all pure ecstasy all the time, gets exhausted and irritable sometimes. What would you say to her? I said, would you tell her, oh, you're a failure as a mother? And she said, oh, I'd never say that. I said, well, why not? That's the way you're talking to yourself. And she said, well, because that would be cruel and it's not even true. And I said, well, tell me why. Why isn't it true? And she said, because mothers are human. Perfect mothers don't exist. It's totally understandable to have mixed feelings about a huge change in your life and to be sad and disappointed if your baby's having trouble breastfeeding. But it doesn't mean that you're a bad mother or a failure as a mother. She says, that's incredibly absurd. And I said, well, would you be willing to talk to yourself like that? And she said, oh, you mean that would be okay? I said, absolutely. Have one value system for all human beings. And talk to yourself the same way you'd talk to someone you loved and cared about. In a flash, her depression disappeared. Now, I don't want to make this sound overly simplistic, because sometimes it takes a little work and a little struggle to learn how to crush the negative, distorted thoughts that cause your angst, cause your worries. But it's a tremendously liberating idea, because the idea is not to blame her or anyone for your depression, but the fact that your thoughts and not the events of your life cause your depression is incredibly liberating. And that idea has been around for more than 2,000 years, but the new idea that, in addition, those thoughts that make you so miserable, they're not even valid. They're just distorted thoughts. They're thinking errors. And that is a message of hope, because the very moment you change the way you think, you can change the way you feel. And that's the whole idea behind my first book, Feeling Good, as well as my new book, Feeling Great. But Feeling Great has powerful new techniques that did not even exist in 1980 when I wrote Feeling Good.
I'm speaking with Dr. David Burns, author of Feeling Great, the revolutionary new treatment for depression and anxiety. In Feeling Great, you declare that negative thoughts and feelings are actually a reflection of what's right with us. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's kind of the examples that I just gave. For example, I treated a woman whose daughter had been shot in the face 9 years earlier by some neighborhood boys who snuck up on her, and they had a high-powered pellet rifle. And I guess they thought it was fun or funny, but they aimed it a foot from her face, and the bullet hit her tooth. The tooth exploded and required years of surgeries and treatment for her daughter for post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, remember, depression and anxiety don't result from events. That's a horrible event, and it would be understandable to feel profoundly sad and concerned about your daughter. But Karen, the woman in Feeling Great who had this exact problem, had been feeling severely guilty and ashamed and anxious and depressed for 9 years because she was telling herself, I'm a failure as a mother. I never should have let my daughter go out and play that night. I'm going to have to spend the rest of my life making it up to her. And you can see that those thoughts, that's why she's still struggling 9 years later, because she's still giving herself those messages, which are highly distorted. And the distortion that was bugging her the most was called fortune telling. That's one of the 12 thinking errors that causes depression and anxiety. She was telling herself, I never should have let my daughter go out and play that night. But she had let her daughter go out and play every night for years. And there was no way she could have known, say to her daughter, wait 10 minutes, sweetheart, if you go out now, you're going to get shot. That's the unfairness of these distorted thoughts, that we don't realize that we're giving ourselves messages that are not only cruel, but they don't make sense. But you can't see that when you're depressed, because you think your thoughts are as valid as the fact that there's skin on your hands. But look at what her thoughts show about her that's positive and awesome. When she says, I'm a bad mother, I'm a failure as a mother, it shows her humility. It shows her high standards. And I asked her, do you have high standards? She said, oh, absolutely. And do your high standards, have they worked in your favor? Have you worked hard? Have you accomplished a lot? She said, oh, yes, I have a PhD. I have a tremendous career. I've done so many things for my daughter. In addition, I said, well, suppose we could press a magic button. You're asking for help, and all your depression and anxiety would vanish in a flash, and you'd be euphoric. Would you press it? And she said, absolutely. And I said, well, we don't have a magic button, but I've got pretty magical techniques, but I'm not sure we should use them. And she said, why not? And I said, well, if you press the magic button, you'll be happy right now. Is that what you want? You want to feel happy about the fact that your daughter's still struggling after 9 years from post-traumatic stress disorder? She said, oh, no. I see what you mean. That would be terrible. You see, she hadn't seen that her depression and anxiety, her shame, these are expressions of her love, her commitment to her daughter. And the moment she saw that, suddenly her resistance to change went down, and it became easy for her to crush these distorted thoughts. And at the end of the session, which took about 90 minutes, not only had her intense depression and anxiety and shame and anger and rage at the beginning of the session vanished completely, but she actually did go into a state of euphoria. And then the odd thing was, and I recorded the session for her and gave her the recording, and afterwards she played it for her daughter, and her daughter hadn't known that her mother was depressed. And when she saw that, it brought them so close together, her daughter's depression disappeared. And then she emailed me just a couple months ago, which was 4 years after the session, just to say, Dr. Burns, I'm still on a high. The work we did that night was monumental. My daughter went ahead and finished college. She's gotten married. She's pursuing a master's degree in clinical social work. And so the message in Feeling Great, and there are live case studies to show it. You can listen to recordings and hear the treatments I describe in the book, because I published them on my website, feelinggood.com, in Feeling Good Podcasts, is that you can change the way you feel, and that you can do that rapidly and without years of therapy and without medications. And I'm just so hopeful that listeners right now who are listening, if they pick up Feeling Great or even my first book, Feeling Good, and read it and do the written exercises, will also have the gift of changing the way you feel. There's no greater gift in life than the gift of happiness.
And how are depression, anxiety, and other negative feelings linked to low self-esteem?
Low self-esteem is the key to depression. Depression has five pieces to it, but that's one of the main ones. I'm not good enough. I'm a loser. I'm not smart enough. A man named Bradley told me recently that he felt like he was a failure. His life was a failure because he wasn't earning enough money. And although he had a beautiful wife and daughter who loved him to death, he had this idea that a real man has to earn, you know, a lot of money. And since his job is quite modest and he's doing great at his work and he gets stellar ratings, he's telling himself, I'm not good enough. I'm not successful enough. And every single person who feels depressed has that idea that you're not good enough. And part of recovery from depression is the death of the self. It's something the Buddha talked about 2,500 years ago, and most religions have talked about it. Like in Christianity, it's called the forgiveness of sins, the idea that you can feel joy and feel the fantastic miracle of being alive and being close to people without being loved, without fancy works, without great accomplishments. And that's why recovery from depression is not only a psychological event that is spectacular, but it's also a kind of a spiritual event too. And in the book Feeling Great, I talk a lot about, although I don't ever push religion or anything like that, but there are spiritual changes that happen at the moment of recovery. But anyway, low self-esteem is key to depression. And then the other four pieces are hopelessness, sadness, a loss of motivation, and the loss of pleasure and satisfaction in life. Those five pieces are exactly what clinical depression is.
How can someone stuck in negative thoughts and feelings begin to let go of the idea that they're flawed or inferior?
Well, the first piece, you know, I always have people write down their negative thoughts and feelings on a piece of paper. And you can do this in the book, if you like, while you're reading it, so you can see what you're telling yourself. Because once you write these thoughts down, you suddenly see that they're distorted. But you got to write them down, and I have a list of the 10 most common thinking errors in Feeling Good. And I can give you an example with myself. When I was a psychiatric resident, and I was just learning about this new type of therapy, my supervisor criticized the way I had responded to a patient who wasn't paying his bill in the clinic. And, you know, he said, oh, you didn't handle that right. You might have hurt his feelings and, you know, you should have done it this other way. And I immediately panicked. And when I went home on the train, my mind was flooded with these kind of self-critical negative thoughts. And they seemed so real at the time. And I was telling myself, I'm a terrible human being. I have no future as a psychiatrist. They'll probably take away my medical license and I'll be kicked out of this state of Pennsylvania. Things like that, and they seem so true. And when I got home, I said, write them down on a piece of paper and see if they're distorted, see if they have thinking errors. And I told myself, oh no, my thoughts are real. There's no thinking errors here. And that's what everyone says. And then I told myself, well, that's what your patients tell you. Write them on a piece of paper. So I forced myself to write them, and then I said, do these have any of the thinking errors, like all or nothing thinking, or self-blame, or fortune-telling, or emotional reasoning? And I said, these thoughts are incredibly distorted. And then I said, what could you tell yourself instead? I said, well, maybe I could tell myself that I'm a beginner, that beginners are allowed to make mistakes, and that maybe I can just tell this to the patient when I see him tomorrow and tell him how awful I feel because I really like him and care about him, and maybe this will bring us closer together. And suddenly my heart leapt for joy. And then I said, well, what do these thoughts show about you that's positive and awesome? And I said, well, this shows my high standards. It shows I really care about this patient. It shows I really care about my clinical work and my practice. So you suddenly see things in a radically different light. And when I saw the patient the next day, I told him, I said, Hal, I feel terrible because I found out that I didn't respond to you right at all last week, and I'm sure I must have hurt your feelings. You might be feeling angry and disappointed, and I'm just so grateful that you came back, and I'm kind of ashamed, but at the same time I'm excited because I think this dialogue could bring us so much closer together. And he just opened up and started crying, and we had the greatest session ever. At the end, he gave me just the highest rating on the feedback for the session. But that's how it works. When you're upset, you feel like a loser. I thought I was a horrible human being, and it seemed so true at the time. But there are these thinking errors that we get into, and when you change the way you think, you can change the way you feel. And that's what the new book, Feeling Great, is all about, because I just want people to know how these techniques work, because so many people have been going to therapists for years and taking antidepressants for years with no change. Before I learned this new approach, I was doing full-time psychopharmacology at University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. I was giving out antidepressants by the book, bushels of them, and I rarely saw people recover. Some of them got a little better. A lot of them got worse. And I said, this sucks. I don't want to spend the rest of my life doing this. I want something that will help people change, and change dramatically and change rapidly. So I left my position at the medical school doing research and brain chemistry and psychopharmacology treatment to develop what was then new in the mid-1970s, cognitive therapy. And I'm glad that I made that change, because the path for me has been a path of incredible joy, incredible development. Nothing makes me feel better than seeing someone get better. When the patient recovers, it puts me on a high. And now when I see people, it happens pretty much the first time I sit down with people. I only treat people for two-hour sessions, but usually I can complete the treatment in 2 hours, and the people not only get less depressed, they get joy, and that joy is infectious, and I feel it too, and that's why I wrote Feeling Great, because I want to spread that joy to the millions and millions of people who are struggling right now, worse during the pandemic, but it's been there throughout history. I'm sure 50,000 years ago, people were feeling depressed and anxious and inadequate, and it's just great that we now have powerful new techniques, drug-free techniques, to help most people change the way you think and feel.
That transition of thought that you had from I'm a failure to I'm new and I'm learning, would you consider that an example of positive reframing of a negative thought?
Somewhat, but it's also challenging the distortion. There's actually two parts to the new treatment. One is saying that I'm a failure is really kind of unfair and distorted, like it's all or nothing thinking, like you're a total success or you're a total failure. Come on, give me a break. It doesn't work like that. Everyone who's learning psychotherapy learns, and we learn through success and we learn through our failures along the way. And so it's a way of being kind to yourself to say, I'm a beginner. I have a right to make mistakes and to learn from them and to correct those mistakes. And when I'm 78 years old, which is what I am today, I'll probably still make mistakes and still learn from them, and that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing, nothing to be ashamed of. That's the cognitive therapy part of it. But the positive reframing part of it, the new thing that I've developed at Stanford, is that the reason I had that thought in the first place was because of something good about me, not because of something bad about me. I didn't get depressed after I was criticized because I have a mental disorder, as they would claim in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM-5. It has hundreds of mental disorders. So if you're anxious, you have generalized anxiety disorder. And if you feel depressed for 14 days, you have major depressive disorder. And if you're shy in social situations, you have social anxiety disorder. And all that giving people disorders makes people feel like broken and defective. And these are experts who are telling you have these brain disorders. And it's demoralizing to people. And there are a few true brain disorders, like schizophrenia is a sad and tragic true brain disorder. But most of what people are struggling with, those are just human emotions of sadness and anxiety and shame and guilt and anger and loneliness. And those feelings do not result from what's wrong with you, but from what's most beautiful and awesome about you. And the moment people see this, the shame disappears. And then I also say to people, well, maybe we shouldn't try to make these feelings disappear. Maybe we could just dial them down a little bit. Like, you're 90% depressed today. How much depression would you want to have so you could still keep all those beautiful things about you. If you dial everything down to zero, all these beautiful things about you will go down the drain along with your negative feelings. So don't press the magic button. Let's dial them down. And then people will say, well, I think 20% would be enough depression. And I say, are you sure that's high enough? Could I try to sell you on 30%? They say, no, 20 would be plenty. Okay, and how anxious do you want to feel? And they say, 5 is enough. And how ashamed do you want to feel? 10% would be enough. So people decide to dial their feelings way down, and that puts them in control. And so now the therapist is no longer trying to sell the patient on something. It's putting the patient in control and making a deal with the patient's subconscious mind. We'll dial your feelings down to this level, but no further. So that frees up the patient's resistance, and then they go to work on their negative thoughts and feelings, and suddenly their goals change. And in the course of therapy, they usually decide to dial them all the way down to zero. But that's kind of how it works. And by the way, your questions are really awesome.
Thank you. I'm speaking with Dr. David Burns, author of Feeling Great, the revolutionary new treatment for depression and anxiety. In Feeling Great, Dr. Burns, you present a team approach to conquering depression and anxiety. Can you give us an overview of what that is?
Yes. TEAM stands for T-E-A-M. And it's not a new school of therapy. I think we should get rid of all the schools of therapy because they compete like cults or religions. And I think we need to develop a science-based, data-driven approach to psychotherapy. And that's what TEAM is. And the T stands for testing. I test patients, and my students and colleagues test patients at the start and end of every therapy session with sensitive, brief scales asking, how do you feel right now? And so if the patient is like 80% depressed out of 100 at the start of the session, we'll measure it at the end of the session, and my goal is to reduce that as close to zero as possible. And we also measure suicidal impulses at the start and end of each session, anxiety, anger, relationship satisfaction, and happiness. And the testing part is like an emotional x-ray machine. You wouldn't try to run an emergency room without an x-ray machine. It would be malpractice. And I think it's equal malpractice to have therapy sessions without using the emotional x-ray machine that I've developed, because it allows therapists to see for the first time exactly how effective are you or ineffective are you in every single therapy session. And that has been a game changer that's led to the new TEAM therapy, because my patients have taught me what works and what doesn't work. In addition, at the end, they rate me and all of my colleagues and students on empathy. How warm and caring were you during the session? Did you really understand how the patient felt inside? How helpful were you to this session? And those ratings are also can be very humbling to the therapist, because most therapists get failing grades at first. But if the therapist is humble and open and willing to learn how the patient really feels about the therapist, it can be a massive game changer. And then E stands for empathy. It's crucial to develop a warm therapeutic relationship with every patient, and that takes about 25 minutes to get to what the patient would describe as perfect therapeutic empathy. You know how the patient's thinking, you know how the patient's feeling, and the patient feels cared about and accepted. And then we go on to the A, which is the assessment of resistance, and that's when we make the patient aware, see why they have resisted and might resist change, and we melt away that resistance. And then M equals methods, and I've developed more than 100 methods to crush the negative thoughts that cause depression and anxiety. Most patients will only need 2 or 3, but I think it's comforting for patients to know that there's a tremendous armamentarium now, an arsenal, if you will, of powerful techniques to smash the thoughts that create your misery. And I describe many of these techniques in Feeling Great. In fact, I have a section called the Cognitive Distortion Starter Kit, which shows you what are the best techniques if you tend to do all or nothing thinking, or if you tend to do self-blame, blaming yourself all the time for things, or if you do fortune telling, predicting that something awful is going to happen, or predicting that you'll never recover, or for emotional reasoning or hidden should statements. And so that's kind of how it works. And then once the patient is completely recovered, which again, in my experience, is pretty fast, generally just one session, then I do relapse prevention training, because the negative thoughts that cause depression and anxiety, once a person has recovered, will tend to come back over and over throughout your life. No one's entitled to be happy all the time. There's bumps in the road for all of us, and when bad things happen or you get stressed for this or that reason, the same pattern of negative thoughts will return. And so it takes about 20 minutes or 25 minutes to do relapse prevention training, and that means to inform the patient once they're recovered and they're feeling joy that you're not going to be happy forever. You're only entitled to 5 happy days per week and 2 miserable days. And if you don't have your 5 happy days, you need a tune-up. And if you don't have your 2 miserable days, we're going to have to give you lithium because you're probably getting too happy. But the main point is that the technique that you learned in the therapy or the technique that helps you in the book Feeling Great, once you find the technique that helps you, it will always help you for the rest of your life. And so I just practice with the patient. Let's now talk back to what your negative thoughts are going to be when you relapse 3 weeks from now or 3 months from now or whenever you get upset again. And I have them record that and listen to the recording so they can hear themselves blasting their own distorted thoughts out of the water. And that's pretty effective. I've had over 40,000 therapy sessions with people with severe depression and anxiety. And I always say at the end of therapy, I give you a lifetime, unlimited, free guarantee. If you ever get upset and can't handle it, come on back. We'll take a session or two, and I'll show you how to turn it around again. And in my whole life, there's only been maybe a dozen patients who ever came back for relapses. And so in Feeling Great, I also have a chapter toward the end on relapse prevention training. Feeling Great for Good is the name of the chapter, and that's incredibly important. It's easy to learn to do that, but it's also important so that when you do get relapse, you say, oh, doctor told me this was going to happen, and he gave me some tools, and pick up those tools and use them. And that's been pretty effective. So that's pretty much the whole story.
And speaking of empathy, why is it vital to helping a loved one suffering from depression and not the same as attempting to cheer them up?
That's a great question. Because when people are upset, they want, first of all, someone to understand how they're thinking and feeling. And if you try to cheer them up, it's invalidating. It's as if to tell them you're some kind of an idiot and just give yourself positive messages and feel better. And no one can do that. And so then they feel twice as bad because not only are they depressed, but the people around them are just telling you to do things that you can't really do. But when someone is depressed, they need you to paraphrase their words and feelings and to show warmth and compassion. After her son was born, my daughter would sometimes say to me, Dad, I feel like I'm in prison now. I love the little guy, but I won't be able to go to Aikido practice, do the things I love to do. It's like an 18-year prison sentence. Mm-hmm. And instead of trying to cheer her up, I tried to provide understanding and compassion. And I said things like, you know, Senya, I just love you so much, but you're right. You do have an 18-year prison sentence, and you are giving up all the things that you've loved. And it is kind of unfair in a way. And you're a beautiful mom, and you've got a beautiful little baby, but you've had to sacrifice so much. And I can imagine you feel angry and sad and hopeless and really kind of devastated. And I just want you to know that I love you tremendously. And then she would suddenly perk up and say, well, that's actually, Dad, I really love my son. I'm so glad I have this baby, and you know, I'm not nearly as trapped as I kind of make it sound like. And then she'd suddenly cheer up, but I didn't try to help her. And on my website, feelinggood.com, there's a ton of free resources if any of your listeners want to go there. There's free depression class, free classes, many of them free anxiety classes, and also my Feeling Good podcasts. And one of our most popular Feeling Good podcasts is How to Help and How Not to Help. And I show listeners exactly how to respond effectively to someone who's depressed. I also have a video of someone who's throwing help at someone who's depressed. She's cheerleading so the listeners can hear how truly awful that is. It's kind of shocking and completely surprising to people to learn the difference between true helping and try to cheer someone up. People need love and warmth and understanding. They don't need mothers and fathers and friends who are trying to act like shrinks.
As a psychiatrist, do you think it's possible to treat depression, anxiety, and mood disorders without antidepressants or other drugs?
Oh, yes, yes. I wouldn't use them anymore. I was doing full-time brain research at the medical school on this chemical imbalance theory, and our research showed that when we published in the top psychiatric journal, the Archives of General Psychiatry, in 1975, we did a study at the medical school that showed, to my way of thinking, pretty conclusively that it's not true that depression and anxiety are caused by a chemical imbalance in the brain, a so-called deficiency of the happy chemical, serotonin. We showed that serotonin has nothing to do with depression and isn't even a happy chemical. We don't know the causes of depression, except that it's based on negative thinking, distorted negative thoughts. But I've given out antidepressants personally on roughly 13,000 occasions, so you can't say I'm an outsider or a whiner, but I never saw much from them. And my later years, I've stopped using them completely because when I sit down with someone, they recover in 2 hours in a single session. So there's no need for that. Irving Kirsch is a colleague from Harvard who is the head of the placebo research laboratory there, and he had a book out called The Emperor's New Drugs, which you can get on Amazon. It's a thin paperback, and it's a pretty fast read. But he's shown pretty conclusively, and this will shock and probably anger many listeners, and I'm not telling anyone to change the medicines that you're taking, but he showed pretty conclusively that the chemicals called antidepressants have few or no true antidepressant effects above and beyond their placebo effects. And that is entirely consistent with my experience. I published an article from my clinic in Philadelphia on hundreds of patients we treated and reported in the top psychology research journal that the patients who we treated with cognitive therapy plus antidepressants actually got better more slowly than the patients who we treated with psychotherapy, with cognitive therapy alone. But this is puzzling to people because they don't understand the placebo effect. If I have a new drug and I name it Placebin, and I say I'm going to do to show how wonderful this new drug is, I'm going to treat 1 million Americans who were depressed with this new drug. I'm going to treat everyone for free. And so we give them 3 months supply of this new chemical called Placebin. But we don't tell them it's just a placebo. It's just a pill with inert ingredients. That's what a placebo is. Well, 350,000 of them will recover. So if you think something's going to help you, at least in the realm of depression, there's a one-third chance that you'll recover. But it's not the antidepressant that did it, because the same percentage who get the placebos recover as those who get like Prozac and Zoloft and all of these so-called antidepressants. Now, I've never, ever been against drugs. You know, I started my career as a full-time work on brain chemistry and psychopharmacology, and I had a tenure-track position. I had a grant from the federal government to develop a laboratory at the university to study the so-called chemical imbalance theory. But I sent the money back. I didn't want to spend my time doing that. I wanted to heal people. And I found that these new drug-free techniques, like the ones I described in Feeling Good or my new book, Feeling Great, are just surprisingly powerful. Occasionally, drugs are life-changing. I've never been against drugs. I'm just against drugs that don't work or drugs you don't really need. And the sad thing is if someone takes an antidepressant and recovers, they'll attribute it to the drug, to the chemical. But it was the placebo effect, or it was their own actions telling yourself, hey, I'm going to get better now. And then you become more active, you become more hopeful, and then your mood brightens and you attribute it to the medication when, in fact, you really healed and cured yourself. So if I'm working with someone with schizophrenia, they may need medications when they're tremendously psychotic and hallucinating. And with people with bipolar 1 who get manic and they get euphoric and really develop psychotic episodes, they may definitely need and benefit from medications during certain phases of that illness. But the new form of psychotherapy also can make tremendous contributions to the treatment of people without these psychotic disorders, as well as people who are struggling with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, because even if you're schizophrenic and have some true brain disorder that's causing that, you may still want to be able to feel better, to feel great. You'll still have schizophrenia, but at least you won't be feeling terrible about yourself or your life.
What's the biggest takeaway you want general readers and therapists to get from Feeling Great?
That you can change the way you feel, and you can often do it quickly, and you can do it without medications, but it will take some effort. Just passively going to a doctor and talking is not going to cure much of anything. You've got to pick up a book like Feeling Great and do those written exercises, and that not only is improvement possible, but feeling great is possible. Feeling great feels wonderful, and you owe it to yourself to feel great. And it is possible to change the way you think and feel.
I've been speaking with psychiatrist Dr. David Burns, author of Feeling Great, The Revolutionary New Treatment for Depression and Anxiety. Dr. Burns, tell us again how people can get your book.
Well, you can just go to Amazon and just search for David Burns, MD, Feeling Great. That and my old book, Feeling Good, have been taking turns in the number one bestseller position in the depression category on Amazon. That's the easiest way to do it. Or you can go to my website, feelinggood.com, and you can find links there to the purchase of the book, as well as a ton of free resources, because I think a lot of people these days don't have much money. Losing job and maybe never had a lot of income, can't afford a fancy shrink, and that's why I've developed tons of free resources for people, resources that can really help you if you can't even afford to buy Feeling Good or Feeling Great. My first book, Feeling Good, you can actually buy sometimes used on Amazon for under $8. So the cost is significant, but not great.
Thank you so much for talking with me today.
It's been awesome. I've loved talking to you. Thank you so much.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.